Chapter 48. At the time that Rod Ironsides was composing himself for sleep, Big King was taking a little wine with his business associate and tribal brother, Philemon Ngabai, alias Crooked Leg. They sat facing each other in a pair of dilapidated cane chairs with a lantern and a gallon jug of Jerrypigo set between them. The bat stench of the abandoned workings did little to bring out the bouquet of the wine, which was of small concern to either man, for they were drinking not for taste, but for effect. Crooked Leg refilled the cheap glass tumbler that Big King proffered, and as the wine glug-glugged from the jar, he continued his attack on the character and moral fibre of José Almeida, the Portuguese. "For many months now, I have had it in my heart to speak to you of these matters," he told Big King. "But I have waited until I could set a deadfall for the man. He is like a lion that preys upon our herds. We hear him roar in the night, and in the dawn we see his spoor in the earth about the carcasses of our animals. But we cannot meet him face to face." Big King enjoyed listening to the oratory of Crooked Leg, and while he listened, he drank the Jerrypigo as though it were water, and Crooked Leg kept refilling the tumbler for him. "In counsel with myself, I spoke thus: Philemon Ngabai, it is not enough that thou should suspect this white man. It is necessary also that you see with your own eyes that he is eating your substance." "How, Crooked Leg?" Big King's voice was thickening. The level of the jug had fallen steadily and now showed less than half. "Tell me how we shall take this man." Big King showed a fist the size of a bunch of bananas. "I will..." "No, Big King." Crooked Leg was scandalized. "You must not hurt the man. How then would we sell our gold? We must prove he is cheating us, and show him we know it. Then we will proceed as ever, but he will give us full measure in the future." Big King thought about that for some time. Then at last he sighed regretfully. "You are right, Crooked Leg. Still, I would have liked to..." He showed that fist again, and Crooked Leg went on hurriedly. "Therefore, I have sent to my brother who drives a delivery van for S.A. Scale Company in Johannesburg. And he has taken from his company a carefully measured weight of 8 ounces. Crooked Leg produced the cylindrical metal weight from his pocket and handed it to Big King, who examined it with interest. "Tonight, after the Portuguese has weighed the gold you take to him, you will say, 'Now, my friend, please weigh this for me on your scale.' And you will watch to see that his scale reads the correct number. Each time in the future, he will weigh this on the scale before we sell our gold."
"Oh," Big King chuckled, "you are a crafty one, Crooked Leg."
Big King's eyes were smoky and bloodshot. The Jerrypigo was a raw, rough, fortified wine, and he had drunk very nearly a gallon of it. He sat opposite the Portuguese storekeeper in the back room behind the concession store, and watched while he poured the gold dust into the pan of the jeweller's scale. It made a yellow pyramid that shone dully in the light from the single bare bulb above their heads.
123 ounces.
Almeida looked up at Big King for confirmation. A strand of greasy black hair hung onto his forehead. His face was pale from lack of sun, so that the blue stubble of beard was in heavy contrast.
"That is right," Big King nodded.
He could taste the liquor fumes in the back of his throat, and they were as strong as his distaste for the man who sat opposite him. He belched. Almeida removed the pan from the scale and carefully poured the dust back into the screw-top bottle.
"I will get the money."
He half rose from his chair.
"Wait," said Big King,
and the Portuguese looked at him in mild surprise. Big King took the weight from the pocket of his jacket. He placed it on the desk.
"Weigh that on your scale," he said in Portuguese.
Almeida's eyes flicked down to the weight and then back to Big King's face. He sank back into his seat and pushed the strand of hair off his forehead. He began to speak, but his voice cracked and he cleared his throat.
"Why? Is there something wrong?"
Suddenly he was aware of the size of the man opposite him. He could smell the liquor on his breath.
"Weigh it."
Big King's voice was flat, without rancor. His face was expressionless, but the smoky red glare of his eyes was murderous. Suddenly, Almeida was afraid, deadly, coldly afraid. He could guess what would happen once the error in his balance was disclosed.
"Very well,"
he said, and his voice was forced and off-key. The pistol was in the drawer beside his right knee. It was loaded with a cartridge under the hammer. The safety catch was on, but that would only delay him an instant. He knew it would not be necessary to fire. Once he had the weapon in his hand, he would have control of the situation again. If he did have to fire, the caliber was .45, and the heavy slug would stop even a giant like this Bantu. Self-defense. He was working it out feverishly. A burglar. I surprised him, and he attacked. Self-defense. It would work. They'd believe it. But how to get the pistol? Try and sneak it out of the drawer, or make a grab for it? There was a desk between them. It would take a few seconds for the Bantu to realize what he was doing. A few more for him to get around the desk. He would have plenty of time. He snatched the handle of the drawer and it flew open. His fingernails scrabbled against the woodwork as he clawed for the big black U.S. Navy automatic, and with a surge of triumph, his hand closed over the butt. Big King came over the top of the desk like a black avalanche. The scale and the jar of gold dust were swept aside to clatter and shatter against the floor. Still seated in his chair, with the pistol in his hand, Almeida was borne over backwards with Big King on top of him. Many years before, Big King had worked with a safari outfit in Portuguese East Africa, and he had seen the effect of gunshot wounds in the flesh of dead animals. In the instant that he had recognized the weapon in Almeida's hand, he had been as afraid as the Portuguese. Fear had triggered the speed of his reaction. It was responsible for the savagery of his attack as he lay over the struggling body of the Portuguese. He had Almeida's pistol hand held by the wrist, and he was shaking it to force him to drop the firearm. With his right hand, he had the Portuguese by the throat, and instinctively he was applying the full strength of his arms to both grips. He felt something break under his right hand, cracking like the kernel of a nut, and his fingers locked deeper into the quivering flesh. The pistol flew from fingers that were suddenly without strength, and skittered across the floor to come up against the far wall with a thump. Only then did Big King begin to realize the sanity that fear had scattered. Suddenly he realized that the Portuguese was lying quietly under him. He released his grip and scrambled to his knees. The Portuguese was dead. His neck was twisted away from his shoulders at an impossible angle. His eyes were wide and surprised, and a smear of blood issued from one nostril over his upper lip. Big King backed away towards the door, his gaze fixed in horror on the sprawling corpse. When he reached the door, he hesitated, fighting down the urge to run. He subdued it and went back to kneel beside the desk. First, he picked up the controversial cylindrical weight and placed it in his pocket. Then he began sweeping up the scattered gold dust and the shattered fragments of the screw-topped container. He placed them into separate envelopes that he found among the papers on the desk. And 10 minutes later, he slipped out through the back door of the concession store into the night.